counterculture revolution, the undermining of the foundations of religion and morality. I mean, we know that we're living in a completely amoral society. And so people say, how can a young person go into their schoolhouse and open fire on their classmates? Because we've taught a whole generation, a couple of generations now of Americans, that there is no right and wrong.
I haven't taught them that, Mike Johnson. Maybe you have.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No,
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP. Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV. Out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN. Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ. In Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman. Your friendly, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. The news has been grim indeed since we last spoke yesterday. So I will hit some of that grim news quickly here in the A block, with a promise, for what it's worth, to brighten things up a little bit with some good news indeed.
Yay.
In the B block. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi. We could certainly use a little bit of good news.
And yes, there is some good news, in fact, since last we spoke. Quite a bit, in fact, even if I think it is unlikely to get the same kind of coverage, understandably, in several of these cases of the grim news. So let's start here. As we go to air, authorities are carrying out a multi-state manhunt on land and water for a U.S. Army reservist who they say killed 18 people and wounded 13 in a mass shooting at a bowling alley and at a bar that sent panicked patrons scrambling under tables and behind bowling pins and has gripped the entire state of Maine in fear. Schools, doctors, offices, grocery stores are all closed, and people are staying behind locked doors in cities as far as 50 miles away from the scenes of Wednesday night's shootings in Lewiston, the state's second largest city after Portland. The attacks stunned a state of only 1.3 million people that has one of the lowest homicide rates in the nation, with a total of just 29 killings in all of 2022. Police said they have no reported sightings of the suspect, Robert Card, since the shootings. Card reportedly underwent a mental health evaluation in mid-July after he began acting erratically during reservist training, according to a U.S. official. And yet, somehow, he appears to have had no problem getting access to a high-power, tactical, military-style assault weapon to bring untold carnage in just a matter of minutes at several different locations. You may recall that one of, if not the, first bills signed into law by Donald Trump after taking office back in 2017 allowed those adjudicated to be mentally ill to purchase firearms anyway. Because freedom, you know. Shannon Watts, the founder of the gun safety group Moms Demand, noted on Twitter last night that, quote, Maine does not require background checks on all gun sales. They do not have a red flag law allowing weapons to be taken from those found to be a danger to themselves or others. They do not prevent domestic abusers from accessing guns. They do not ban assault weapons. They do not limit magazine capacity. They do not require concealed carry permits or restrict open carry or have a waiting period for buying weapons. Freedom in Maine. 8 murder warrants were issued for Card, who is said to be 40 years old, after authorities identified 8 of the victims. According to police, 10 more will likely be issued once the names of the rest of the dead are confirmed. 3 of the 13 people wounded in the shootings are said to be in critical condition as of airtime, and 5 were hospitalized but stable. Lawmakers in Maine did pass a yellow flag law back in 2019 that would require police to seek a medical evaluation of anyone they believe to be dangerous before then trying to take their guns away. However, critics charged that it was a weaker version of the tougher red flag laws, the popular red flag laws that many other states have adopted and that many Republicans oppose. Author Stephen King responded to the shootings on Thursday morning in a pair of posts on Twitter to say, quote, the shootings occurred less than 50 miles from where I live. It's the rapid fire killing machines, people, he said. This is madness in the name of freedom. Stop electing apologists for murder. We will get back to some of those apologists in a minute, but also since we last spoke, the death toll from the catastrophic Category 5 Hurricane Otis, which spun up from tropical storm to Cat 5, the highest classification on the Saffir-Simpson scale. It did so in less than 12 hours before slamming into and devastating the resort city of Acapulco in Mexico. Well, that death toll from that storm is currently at 27. It is expected to climb, however, as survivors continued on Thursday to search for acquaintances and necessities and hope that aid arrives quickly. On Tuesday, Otis took many of us by surprise when it rapidly strengthened from a tropical storm to a powerful Category 5 hurricane as it tore along the coast. A hillside, for example, collapsed on a family in a tin-roofed home. The force of the mud and water tore a 3-year-old girl away from her mother. She has not been seen since. Army bulldozers have begun clearing knee-deep mud from Acapulco's main boulevards. President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador said Otis had toppled every power line pole in the zone where it hit on Wednesday, leaving much of the city of 1 million without electricity. Acapulco's municipal water system was down and some, 500,000 homes lost power. Brown floodwaters extended for miles in some areas. It took nearly all day on Wednesday for authorities to partially reopen the main highway connecting Acapulco to the state capital and Mexico City. The vital ground link allowed dozens of emergency vehicles, personnel, and trucks carrying supplies to finally reach the battered port. Acapulco's commercial and military airports were still too badly damaged, however, to resume flights. Large buildings had their walls and roofs partially or completely ripped off. Dislodged solar panels, cars, and debris littered the lobby of one of several severely damaged hotels. People wandered up to their waists in water in some areas, while on other less flooded streets, soldiers began to shovel rubble and fallen palm fronds from the pavement. Otis turned from mild to monster in record time, and scientists are struggling to figure out how and why they did not see it. But of course, this is a pattern that we have seen all season long with the rapid, actually explosive intensification of these storms, Desi Doyen. Will, you've been covering it on Green News Report for months now, frankly. Yep. And we will discuss it a little bit more in our GNR later today. But in truth, the increase in the number and severity and rapid intensification of these storms is exactly what climate scientists have been warning about for years due to man-made global warming. And and I got to say, sadly, this is not unrelated news today, but as you know, the Republicans in the U.S. House on Wednesday, after 3 weeks of trying and failing, finally found someone that they could all agree on as the new Speaker of the House. That would be far right-wing Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson. Sort of like Jim Jordan, but farther to the right, with more religion and less baggage, in that nobody really knew anything about Mike Johnson until he was elevated to Speaker this week. In fact, Johnson represents his entire caucus very well. He's a strong Trump ally who favors criminalizing abortion, slashing Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. He moved to adopt a Don't Say Gay bill to restrict the First Amendment free speech rights to discuss gender and sexual issues. He opposes the constitutional separation between church and state. Well, who needs that? He wants big government to intercede in medical decisions, to restrict medical care to LGBTQ people, among other things. And receiving the most attention, I believe, was he was the lead architect for the GOP effort in Congress to block the certification of Joe Biden's victory, presidential victory in the 2020 presidential election. To block the certification in Congress and by voting against that certification and leading an effort in the courts as well. He even falsely claimed that Republicans had hard evidence right after the election that voting machines were used to steal the election from Donald Trump in Georgia.
You know, the allegations about these voting machines, some of them being rigged with this software by Dominion. Look, there's a lot of merit to that. And when the president says the election is rigged, that's what he's talking about, that it was the fix was in. Nope. You know, I could give example after example in all these states. I don't know how much time y'all have this morning, but they know that in Georgia, it really was rigged. It was set up for the Biden team to win.
Nope.
You know, in every election in American history, there's some small element of fraud, irregularity, error. We just know that. You just accept that that's the case.
Okay.
But when you have it on a broad scale,
nope.
When you have, you know, a software system that is used all around the country that is suspect because it came from Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, when you have you know, testimonials of people in large numbers, it begs to be litigated and investigated, you know, and that's the problem that we're up against, and that's why the president is so frustrated, and that's why so many 71, 73 million Americans around the country feel like that the election was stolen from them. Mm.
It has been litigated. It was litigated, actually, quite a bit. It was litigated, and Trump lost all of them because they have no evidence. It didn't happen the way that they say.
And, well, actually, I would argue in response to him that many Americans feel like the election was stolen from them because guys like Donald Trump and Mike Johnson were out there just like that, lying to them and telling them that it was. That in Georgia, quote, it really was rigged. It was set up via voting machines from dead Hugo Chavez in Venezuela to make sure that the Biden team won. No, that's not actually what happened at all, Speaker Johnson. It's an utter and complete lie. Or at least if it isn't, there has not been a shred of evidence to actually support those charges in the now nearly 3 years since liars like Mike Johnson began repeating the big lie over and over and over to the American people in hopes of, yes, stealing the election for Donald Trump. In any event, naturally, many are very concerned about that happening again under a Speaker Mike Johnson in the 2024 presidential election. But receiving much less focus, outrageously so, I would add, if in light only of what happened this week in Acapulco, with the terrifying, record-setting, unprecedented Hurricane Otis. Receiving much less attention is Mike Johnson's record not only of being an election liar, but also of being a climate science liar. We will discuss all that as well a little bit in our Green News Report later this hour. But since we don't have enough time in our GNR to cover all the points that Americans really need to know about it and know about this guy, I want to take a moment here to sort of run through my cousin Lisa Friedman's report for the New York Times. All right, she's not actually my cousin, at least as far as I know. But Lisa Friedman reports today, Representative Mike Johnson of Louisiana, the newly elected House Speaker, has questioned climate science, opposed clean energy, and received more campaign contributions from oil and gas companies than from any other industry last year. Surveys, she writes, show that climate science has been politicized in the United States to an extent not experienced in most other countries. I wonder why that is. A Pew Research Center survey released on Tuesday found that a vast majority of Democrats polled, 85%, said that climate change is an extremely or very serious problem, while just 47% of Republicans, that's a minority of Republicans for some of you math-impaired MAGA folks out there. 47% of Republicans viewed climate change as not too serious or not really a problem at all. It said Ben Jealous, the executive director of the Sierra Club this week, quote, "It should concern us all that someone with such extreme views and so beholden to the fossil fuel industry has such power and influence during a time when bold action on climate is more critical than ever." Johnson, whose district includes the longtime oil town of Shreveport, Louisiana, has consistently voted against dozens of climate bills and amendments opposing legislation that would require companies to disclose their risks from climate change. Not necessarily reduce their emissions, but simply disclose, you know, how much they emit and how much climate change might affect their business, you know, for investors. Something that if you're in favor of business, if you're in favor of investing, you would think you'd be in favor of. Well, that's unless you get tens of thousands of dollars from the oil and gas industry. He has opposed bills that would reduce leaks of methane, a potent greenhouse gas from oil and gas wells. He has voted for measures that would cut funding to the Environmental Protection Agency because the environment apparently is, I guess, protected way too much at this point, Des.
Well, you know, Johnson is against literally anything that might possibly have even the chance of reining in the fossil fuel industry's pollution.
He has relied on old climate denier chestnuts, yeah. I think is the best way to call it. At a town hall, for example, he conceded, quote, "The climate is changing. But the question is it being caused by natural cycles or is it changing because we drive SUVs? I don't believe in the latter." So it's just natural cycles, Des.
Of course it is.
Never mind all of the science for years that has said otherwise. Well, we just don't know. Who can know?
Well, you know, the early 2000s called. They want their talking points back.
Yeah, right. After Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Ed Markey unsuccessfully filed their, quote, Green New Deal legislation back in 2019 to aggressively cut emissions and move the country toward 100% renewable energy, Johnson, who was then the chair of the Republican, the very far right-wing Republican Study Committee, issued a 13-page paper dubbing the climate plan a greedy new steal. See what he did there?
Oh, yeah. He worked hard with the thesaurus on that one.
He called the Democrats' plan, quote, a thinly veiled attempt to implement the policies that would usher in a new socialist society in America. I think he meant that in a bad way, but I don't know if that's how it plays. Last year, when Democrats, without any Republican votes, passed landmark climate legislation that provided for investing at least $370 billion in clean energy. Johnson criticized it as a plan to send taxpayer dollars to green energy slush funds. Well, that sounds bad, doesn't it? Much of the private investment stemming from the law, as it turns out, is actually taking hold, as it turns out, in Republican-led states.
Like Louisiana, where Mike Johnson is from.
Since 2018, Johnson has received himself about $240,000 in campaign contributions from the oil and gas industry, according to the campaign finance watchdog Open Secrets. And some of that money apparently has been coming unlawfully from foreign sources, apparently including Russian oligarchs. Last year, almost exactly 1 year ago today, just days before the 2022 midterm elections, in which, thanks to gerrymandering, we'll get to some of that a bit later today, I hope, Republicans won their incredibly narrow majority in the U.S. House, which led to Johnson's elevation to Speaker this week. Well, 1 year ago, the Advocate in Louisiana, a paper in the state, reported a string of campaign donations from a Russian-backed natural gas firm to several high-profile Louisiana Republican officials violated a law aimed at preventing foreign money from funding U.S. political candidates, according to federal investigators. But the three Republicans on the six-person Federal Election Commission blocked a vote to penalize the company named American Ethane, which was founded in New Orleans for funneling, it wasn't founded for funneling Russian money, but it was founded in New Orleans, and the FEC blocked the vote to penalize the company for having funneled Russian money to the candidates and to Republican political committees. Which is exactly, by the way, how the FEC is designed. Staff investigators find crimes, real, you know, career employees at the FEC, and then the Republicans on the committee, the commissioners, vote to block any further action from actually taking place with 3-3 stalemates. That's what's been going on for years now at the FEC. Instead, the FEC fined the firm just $9,500 for a smaller set of improper contributions, which the agency found had violated rules banning corporations from donating to candidates. Two of the three Democratic commissioners called the move, quote, slap on the wrist that failed to account for a violation of one of the most fundamental provisions entrusted to this commission to enforce, unquote. The firm in question, American Ethane, was founded by a guy named John Hutelling, if I'm announcing that correctly. He also owns a New Orleans law firm, so he knows what the law is here, but he is apparently only a minority owner now of American Ethane. The firm is mostly owned by Russian nationals who controlled 88% of the firm at the time of the donations. Now, according to the FEC website, as pointed out to me by Bradblog.com's legal analyst Ernie Canning today, from the FEC website, quote, federal law prohibits contributions, donations, expenditures, including independent expenditures and disbursements solicited, directed, received, or made directly or indirectly by or from foreign nationals in connection with any federal, state, or local election. Seems pretty clear to me. Nonetheless, investigators for the FEC found that the firm in total gave $66,200 in improper contributions, actually unlawful contributions, to Louisiana's U.S. Senators Bill Cassidy and John Kennedy, as well as committees supporting Attorney General Jeff Landry, who recently went on to win an election just a week or two ago to become the state's next governor, and to U.S. Congress members Garrett Graves, Steve Scalise, and yes, Mike Johnson. With the Republicans, however, blocking any further action, the FEC declined to pursue penalties for violations of laws against foreign money in U.S. elections. The Republicans on the commission wrote that there was no evidence that the firm intended to funnel foreign funds into U.S. elections. I guess it was totally an accidental donation.
And they're going to get away with it.
Two of the Democratic commissioners wrote that the Republican commissioners ignored longstanding precedent to look past Russian influence in the elections. They didn't care, apparently. Quote, in this case, it is beyond unfortunate that for three of our colleagues, it was a bridge too far to penalize the use of Russian oligarchs' money to influence U.S. elections, they wrote. One can only hope that in future cases, the commission will once again muster the political will to work together to wall off our elections from the malign influence of foreign money. Oh, don't count on it. Don't hold your breath. Hugh Tilling claimed in an interview that despite the majority ownership by Russian nationals, the company is not aligned with Russia. A well-known Republican strategist who ran disgraced former U.S. Senator David Vitter's gubernatorial campaign and now works for PACs that are backing Kennedy and Cassidy was, as it turns out, American Ethane's lobbyist at the time of the donations. This would be prior to the 2018 election. See how this works? Now, I should make clear, to his credit, if true, Johnson's campaign manager said that the campaign eventually returned the money once it was, quote, made aware of the situation. None of the other Louisiana Republicans who took donations from the firm immediately returned requests for comments, which tells me they did not return the money either.
Yeah, they plan on keeping that one.
The League of Conservation Voters has given Mike Johnson a lifetime score of 2%. I assume that's out of 100%.
Yes.
The so-called American Energy Alliance, on the other hand, which represents fossil fuel interests, gave Mike Johnson a score of 100% in 2022. This year, according to scientists, is shaping up to be the hottest year ever recorded on record. The United States has experienced, until now, at least 23 billion-dollar disasters. That's disasters that end up doing $1 billion of damage or more. So we've experienced 23 of them resulting from extreme weather linked to climate change in 2023 alone. That is a record for this point in the year, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. The list of those disasters, just from August alone, by the way, includes the fire in Maui that killed at least 115 people, the deadliest U.S. wildfire in more than a century. Hurricane Idalia, which struck western Florida as a Category 3 storm, and a storm in Minnesota that dropped hail the size of ping pong balls, cutting off power for more than 25,000 homes and businesses. The NOAA data, which tracks the number of billion-dollar disasters in the U.S., shows a relatively steady upward march from just three such disasters back in 1980, just three of them, to the record 23 that we've experienced in the U.S. just so far this year. The so-called Independent Petroleum Association of America applauded Mike Johnson's election to speaker, saying that as a Louisiana representative, he, quote, knows the importance of both Haynesville shale and Gulf of Mexico production to America's energy future. The scores from the various advocacy groups for Johnson's voting record, however, are nearly identical to those earned by Johnson's predecessor as speaker, Kevin McCarthy. McCarthy, according to a senior vice president at the League of Conservation Voters, quote, made sure that the MAGA House Republicans acted at Big Oil's behest day in and day out. And it's clear that Johnson will be just as extreme, if not worse. Stephen Malloy, the prominent climate denialist who also happens to be a millionaire, a Cato Institute columnist for Fox News. He headed up Big Tobacco's attack on science before shifting that strategy to do the same thing for Big Oil. He's a paid advocate for Philip Morris, ExxonMobil, and other corporations. He called Johnson, quote, a quantum leap improvement over Mr. McCarthy. So that's what we have to look forward to with our new House Speaker that, by the way, does not represent just Republicans, represents the entire U.S. House, represents you and me, Desi Doyen. Are you proud?
Well, I'll just say that Republicans are going to continue working as hard as they can to make climate change as awful as possible. And the only way to stop that from happening is to vote.
Well, I knew the Republicans were good at something. And making climate change as awful as possible seems
to
be.
They're definitely good at
that.
They
are excelling at that. Yep. All right. From the grim to the less so, let's take a break here. Actually, we've got some actual good news stories for you today that I want to get to. And I think we could all use a few on a day like this, one of which might even decrease the odds of Mike Johnson remaining in his position as Speaker of the House. All of that good news straight ahead on today's broadcast before Desi Doyen ruins it with the Green News Report. Don't go away anyway. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
Yes, I'm going, going back to Georgia.
I am.
Where my memory strays to the southern ways of my youthful yesterdays.
I am going back to Georgia, but don't worry, I'm not going to bury you with news about Coffee County voting breaches or Fannie Willis. Not today, Satan. I could, but I won't. So you're welcome. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right, to put it succinctly, the only reason that radical theocrat Mike Johnson, and that is what he is now Speaker of the House, is thanks to Republicans rigging the electoral maps in state after state that they control. And no, that's not just a theory. We actually have evidence of that. We have proof. This is not like Mike Johnson making claims that somehow Democrats rigged the election in Georgia. This, there's actually evidence of, found to be the case in courtroom after courtroom across the country. And by the way, the radical right-wing activists on the U.S. Supreme Court last year helped in state after state. That tide, however, may be continuing to turn. A federal judge ruled on Thursday that a number of Georgia's congressional, state Senate, and state House districts were drawn in a racially discriminatory manner, ordering them to draw an additional black majority congressional district. U.S. District Judge Steve Jones, in a 516-page order.
Wow.
So, yeah, he.
So you know he means it.
He means it. Yeah, he really does not want to be overturned on appeal. He also ordered the state to draw two new black majority districts in Georgia's 56-member state Senate and five new black majority districts in its 180-member state House.
So both state House and state Senate and congressional districts.
Correct.
Wow.
He ordered Georgia's Republican majority General Assembly and governor to fix the maps by December 8, saying that he would redraw districts if lawmakers did not do so. Hours after the ruling, Republican Governor Brian Kemp issued a call for a special session to begin November 29 in order to do so, because in fact the assembly is currently in recess. They're not coming back until January. Judge Jones's ruling follows an 8-day trial in September in which the plaintiffs argued that black voters still need federal help to get a fair shot, while the state argued court intervention on behalf of black voters was not needed. Quote, Georgia has made great strides since 1965 toward equality in voting, Judge Jones wrote. However, the evidence before this court shows that Georgia has not reached the point where the political process has equal openness and equal opportunity for everyone. The Georgia case is part of a wave of litigation after the U.S. Supreme Court earlier this year sort of stunned everyone when it actually stood behind its own years-long interpretation of the Voting Rights Act and rejected a challenge to the law by Alabama. It shouldn't be stunning that the Supreme Court surprised everyone by following its own precedent, but this Supreme Court, well, it was a shock. Courts in Alabama and Florida ruled recently that Republican-led legislatures had unfairly diluted the power of black residents. Legal challenges to congressional districts are also ongoing in Arkansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, New Mexico, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Utah, and in fact, could ultimately swing majority control of Congress next year unless Republicans can continue to try and run out the clock yet again.
Which they will do. They will try.
Yes, they will. But Judge Jones wrote that he would not allow the 2024 elections to be conducted using districts that he has found to be, quote, unlawful. Jones, his order, however, explicitly anticipates an appeal by the state, and such an appeal could slow down that schedule and maybe even let the maps be used again next year. The Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, has previously ruled that judges shouldn't require changes to districts too close to an election. What is too close? We don't know. We'll wait for the Supreme Court to decide, I guess. A new map could, however, shift one of Georgia's 14 congressional seats from Republican to Democratic control. GOP lawmakers redrew the congressional map from an 8-6 Republican majority to a 9-5 Republican majority in 2021. The judge wrote that he conducted a thorough and sifting review of the evidence in the case before concluding that Georgia violated the Voting Rights Act in enacting the current congressional and legislative maps. The judge wrote that despite the fact that all of the state's population increases from 2010 to 2020, all of it was attributable to growth among non-white populations, the number of congressional and state Senate districts with a black majority remained the same when the gerrymandered Republican legislature drew new maps following the 2020 census. In 2021, an ACLU Georgia attorney said in a statement following the ruling, the General Assembly ignored Georgia's diversification over the last decade and enacted a state legislative map that demonstrably diluted the voting strength of black voters. Today's decision, he said, charts a path to correct that grave injustice before the 2024 election cycle. In fact, I think the non-white population increased by about 500,000 people in Georgia, and yet the same number of minority voting districts remained. And speaking of grave injustices that need correcting, groups seeking to help, seeking to keep President Trump off the ballot next year, notched another key legal victory this week after a Colorado state judge sided again with their view of an arcane but critical question. Does Congress need to do anything for Trump to be disqualified under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, the Constitution's so-called insurrection disqualification clause? The judge in Colorado ruled on Wednesday in a case brought by the Good Government Nonprofit Crew that No federal laws are required to apply the Constitutional Clause, a Civil War Reconstruction-era provision which bans officials who engaged in insurrection from holding future office. At the heart of the question is whether the Disqualification Clause in the Constitution is self-executing. I think that's a word you're going to hear a lot. If you haven't heard it before, you're going to hear it a lot between now and next year. If it is self-executing, then no judge needs to rule in a case to disqualify someone from the ballot. Congress does not need to pass a law so that officials can bar those who engaged in an insurrection from the ballot. In other words, if the constitutional provision is self-executing, it's ready to be used right now. It doesn't need a law, the way the Voting Rights Act had to be created to enforce the 15th Amendment of the Constitution. As TPM's Josh Kavinsky reports today, Trump's lawyers argued in the Colorado case that the clause is not self-executing, that Congress would need to pass a law specifying how Section 3 of the 14th Amendment was to be applied. By the way, it was written in the 1800s, so about 150 years ago it was written into the Constitution. But I guess no, Congress didn't think that to write a law for to execute it since then.
You know, they're going to argue whatever they can.
The Denver judge ruled, however, that Trump's complaint was irrelevant. Colorado itself passed an election code which described how disqualification applies, and the judge ruled further that the provision does not require federal enforcement legislation for states to apply it. No more than a federal law would be needed to execute the Constitution's restrictions on foreign-born nationals or a 15-year-old from being on the ballot for president of the United States. The Constitution is already very straightforward and clear on those restrictions. The same question around self-execution still confronts two other disqualification cases brought by our friends at Free Speech for People in Minnesota and in Michigan. The Colorado decision now paves the way for a hearing next week into whether Trump's actions constituted him having engaged in an insurrection. So that's what the hearing will be about. Did he engage in an insurrection? The debate around self-execution emerged in legal circles after a pair of very conservative Federalist Society legal scholars argued in a law review over the summer that the quote, sweep and force of the disqualification clause bars Trump from ever holding office again. That was from far right wingers who were honestly trying to interpret the Constitution, apparently. Moreover, freespeechforpeople.org in the Michigan and Minnesota cases have pointed to several cases from the time that the framers of that amendment put it into place, several cases from that time in which courts upheld the disqualification of former Confederate officials under the Disqualification Clause without incident, and yes, without Congress passing a law to execute it. So there's some good news, I think. And by the way, when I say it's good news, I have said, I think many times that, I think Donald Trump will be the easiest Republican candidate Joe Biden to defeat next year. So it's not necessarily good news on a political level. It is good news for those of us who believe in the Constitution. And a bit more good news before we get to today's GNR, this time for labor. And yes, in fact, union labor. The United Auto Workers and Ford have said they have reached a tentative contract agreement that will end the union's strike against the automakers if it is ratified by workers in a crucial step toward resolving a nationwide work stoppage that continues against two other Detroit automakers. If approved by a majority of Ford's UAW workers, the deal will end a six-week strike that has halted work at Ford's factories in Chicago, in Louisville, in Wayne, Michigan, while ratcheting up pressure at the same time on General Motors and Stellantis to reach agreements with similar terms. The Ford deal includes the biggest contract wins the UAW has secured in years, including a 25% hike in base wages, cost of living adjustments to wages that will help raise the top hourly wage by over 30% to more than $40 an hour by the end of the contract. The starting hourly wage will grow to more than $28 an hour. The deal also shortens the time it takes new workers to reach the top wage. It eliminates wage tiers that had kept newer workers on a lower pay scale. It also boosts Ford's contributions to retirement accounts. In a major concession, Ford has agreed to allow workers to strike over any plant closures. That's an issue that weighs heavily on auto workers who worry about factories shutting down during the transition to electric vehicles, according to Washington Post. Quote, "We won things nobody thought possible," UAW President Sean Fain said after Wednesday's announcement. Sounding a bit like Donald Trump, if you ask me, when he says, "We won things nobody thought possible." In this case, they really did win things that nobody thought were possible. He went on, "Since the strike began, Ford put 50% more on the table than when we walked out." The UAW strike is the union's first against all of Detroit's big three automakers at the same time, and apparently that strategy was effective, at least when it comes to Ford. Wednesday night, UAW Vice President Chuck Browning called the tentative deal, quote, "the most lucrative agreement per member since the 1930s and 40s. The deal arrives during a period of heightened workplace activism in the United States, with workers striking in elevated numbers this year and reaping big results for their pocketbooks because of it, as corporations have been making record profits for years and paying their CEOs, if not their workers, commensurately."
Yeah, the CEOs have all received 40% pay raises over just the last 5 or 6 years. And we had on labor expert Dr. Merrick Masters a few days ago, and he noted that the auto industry workers have given up so much since the financial collapse in 2008 mm-hmm. that if their wages had been adjusted for inflation, they would be making $42 an hour. So this doesn't even catch them up with inflation, but it's a big shift from what they were suffering from.
UPS employees threatened a nationwide shutdown this year, and they won their strongest contract in decades over the summer, securing 48% raises for part-time workers. Some 75,000 Kaiser Permanente healthcare workers, they won big wage increases, including a new $25 minimum wage in California. In Hollywood, 11,000 screenwriters, followed by 160,000 actors, went on strike, effectively shutting down production studios. After 5 months, however, screenwriters approved a deal in September that addresses much of what they went on strike for, including pay increases for streaming content and much more. However, Hollywood actors remain on strike, leaving much of the industry at a standstill. But if you ask me, if you want better pay, if you want better working conditions, if you want better benefits,
join a union. Fight for better pay. You better join a union, brother. Organize today. You'll see where the problem really lies when the union comes around. Rich men earning north of a million wanna keep the working folk down. Wanna keep the working folk down.
Indeed. Don't let them. Green News Report is next. I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. We had such a busy Green News Report today that we actually had to cut out an important story.
Yes.
That does another hurricane, not Otis.
Correct. In the Middle East, Tropical Cyclone Tej hit eastern Yemen this week, and it was only the second cyclone on record to do so, and it left some staggering rainfall totals that caused widespread flooding and lots of damage. They're in dire need of assistance. They received 16 inches of rain in one day, which is 8 times Yemen's annual average rainfall.
16 inches
yep.
in one day.
In one day in the desert.
Unbelievable. Yep. All right. Well,
this is our climate changed world.
It is indeed. And this is our Green News Report.
It was absolutely remarkable to see how fast Hurricane Otis became a monster Category 5.
Powerful Hurricane Otis slams into Mexico and the history books. International Energy Agency predicts fossil fuel demand will peak by 2030, plus...
The climate is changing, but the question is the climate changing because of natural cycles in the atmosphere, or is it changing because we drive SUVs?
New Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson is a climate science denier.
Of course. How do you think he got the job? All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The problem with the climate change debate is that there are facts on both sides. And it's quite
Sounds like your constituents love you, Mike Johnson. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, there are facts apparently on both sides of the climate change issue. Try telling that to the folks in Acapulco today.
Yeah, that one escalated quickly. Hurricane Otis struck Acapulco early Wednesday as a devastating Category 5, with a powerful storm surge inundating the resort city. As we go to air, initial reports indicate widespread damage. Otis made history as the strongest hurricane on record ever to hit Mexico, and the first Category 5 on record for this section of the Eastern Pacific. Fueled by abnormally warm ocean waters of 87 degrees, Otis is the fourth hurricane in 3 weeks to hit Mexico's west coast. Mexico also has been suffering from a persistent record heat wave over the past 5 months.
We have seen this rapid intensification of storms like Otis really all season long. It's happening more and more, and we even talked about it when we referenced Tropical Storm Otis just about a day ago.
Yeah, Hurricane Otis is the latest hurricane to undergo rapid intensification. It surprised forecasters by rocketing from tropical storm status to a Category 5 in just 12 hours.
12 hours!
Giving coastal residents little time to prepare. And studies have established a clear link between man-made global warming, hotter oceans, and more frequent and severe rapid intensification of hurricanes. A study earlier this week confirmed that Atlantic storms are rapidly intensifying more frequently than in the past.
Well, there are facts on both sides. Am I right, Mike Johnson?
In politics, the oil and gas industry is likely very happy that Republican Congressman Mike Johnson from the oil and gas state of Louisiana mm-hmm. was elected by Republicans to be the new Speaker of the House on Wednesday in a victory for the chamber's far-right MAGA caucus. Johnson is a climate science denier who also has tried to roll back the Endangered Species Act.
Oh, nice of him.
Johnson has received more campaign cash from the oil and gas industry than from any other industry since its election to Congress in 2016.
Well, he ain't seen nothing yet.
Meanwhile, Big Oil is doubling down on extracting more fossil fuels that drive human-caused climate change. Days after ExxonMobil announced it was acquiring a Texas fracking company for more than $60 billion, Chevron this week announced it is buying Hess Corporation for $53 billion, including major stakes in projects in Guyana and elsewhere. Analysts say industry consolidation and the acquisition of new reserves indicate that the oil industry is betting that U.S. government policies won't curb fossil fuels in any major way, and that demand for oil and gas will remain high into the 2030s.
Mission accomplished. So these oil companies who claim to be concerned about climate change going to do something about their emissions, what they're doing is increasing them.
Yeah, and it may be a bad bet on demand. The famously cautious International Energy Agency predicted this week, for the first time ever, that demand for climate-warming oil, gas, and coal will soon peak and then fall by 2030. In its annual World Energy Outlook, the IEA says the energy transition is speeding up due to surging growth of clean energy technologies and electric vehicles, and in part to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. IEA Director Fatih Birol said in a statement, quote, "The transition to clean energy is happening worldwide and is unstoppable. It is not a question of if, it is a matter of how soon." Here's IEA Chief Energy Economist Tim Gould.
You often hear that the global energy mix is big, it's difficult to move, but shifts do happen, and they can happen quite quickly.
Yeah. Shifts happen.
The IEA projects that solar energy will be the dominant source of electricity by 2030 with existing government policies. However, the report warns that current policies won't be fast enough to avoid accelerating climate impacts. So the IEA calls for a tripling of renewable energy and a doubling of energy efficiency efforts by 2030.
Keep calling. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I'm unstoppable today. Unstoppable today.
We can only hope.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is unstoppable. It just needs to be faster.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. That is made possible by those of you kind enough to help us stay on your public airwaves by donating any amount you can afford via bradblog.com/donate, either one time or set up a recurring donation, which we could really use your help with right now. Seriously, right now. Bradblog.com/donate. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
I'm unstoppable today.